30 years ago, a movie hit the screens that confronted and shocked people. It ripped the band-aid clean off the scourge that is family and domestic violence in Aotearoa. In the years following, it wasn't just about Māori. And I don't want this to be a cope-up but just about Māori, because that would be wrong. Because I do not want us to think that somehow this particular movie, and I'll name it shortly, was somehow a catalyst for all of this behaviour, or that these sorts of issues only happen in Māori houses. They do not. This was a kaupapa that was on a national shame basis, no matter the ethnicity. In New Zealand, it is estimated that only 33% of family violence cases are reported. On average, police attend a family violence episode every 4 minutes. Every 4 minutes. Can you believe that number? 67% of family violence episodes still remain unreported. Nearly half of all homicides and reported violent crimes are related to a form of family violence in this country. Family violence events have increased 60% over the past 5 years and are predicted to increase by, get this, a further 35% by 2025. The movie I'm talking about, of course, is Once Were Warriors. That's right, Once Were Warriors, 30 years since the movie was first shown here on our shores. And when I say it ripped the band-aid off domestic and family violence in this country, it was confronting. But to be frank, it was something we all needed to see. But I say again, it was not the catalyst, and it certainly was not the reason why we've seen an increase in these numbers. Or, for the simple matter, this is not just an issue to do with Māori. Back to the statistics, 60% over the past 5 years are family violence events that have increased. That's huge. I said that before, further 35% by 2025, that's huge. Now, in 2020 and 2021, there were, get this, 155,338 family harm incidences, which accounted for 16% of all police frontline activity. You want to know what to do about crime in this country? Let's address the issue of family and domestic violence. If the New Zealand police are spending all this time on family harm incidences of one form or another, then surely by hook or by fashionable crook, this is something that we need to do more on. And just on that note, it always confounded me. Why should women and their kids have to leave the home that they live in, and why should their routines be interrupted when the bloke stays behind? It just beggars absolute belief. So there are so many things that we need to be doing about this issue. And so while we have a look at the 30th anniversary of Once Were Warriors, and obviously it catapulted stars into the stratosphere, it also pushed forward the kaupapa that is whānau and domestic violence in Aotearoa. Now, joining me on this little special is Meripeka Raukawa Tait, a former chief executive of the Women's Refuge, and Tar Mark Solomon. Now, Mark is the current chair of the Ministerial Advisory Board of Oranga Tamariki. He's a former chair of Ngāi Tahu. He's a former chair of the Whānau Order Commissioning Agency of the South Island. He's worked intimately with the New Zealand Police. And more importantly, Mark is someone that I often talk to when we have these sort of data-driven discussions as well. And so this is one of many specials that we're going to be running here at Wātea on unpacking the issues that are there. And we'd love to hear from you in the comments on our Facebook page, but be respectful about your own experiences as well, and if this is something that resonates with you. So coming up shortly, I'll be talking to both Meripeka and Mark about the issues involved, but also some solutions. What more could we be doing? Because actually here at Ngāpani Wātea, here at Wātea Radio, that's what it's all about. It's not just about unpacking these issues in the kaupapa. It's about identifying solutions that others might want to consider and take forward. Because like I keep on saying, by hook or by crook, there is something that we need to be doing more of to address what is an absolutely terrible shame on the reputation of our country, a country of less than 6 million people, and yet tens of thousands of women and people every single year are impacted by this. And this is not something that's just been going on, like I keep on saying, for the last 30 years. This is something writ large, not only in the culture and the fabric of our society, this has been going on for years. So let's be a little tough about it, eh? If we're going to be a tough culture, let's get tough about this issue. Let's not raise our fists at the vulnerable or harm them. Let's find solutions to the problem. I'm Matt Tukaki. Thanks for joining me.
Kia mōhio mai koe I ngā au piki, ngā au heke o te wā. Tino hia te whārangi I purangi, www.irakatiwatea.news, irakati.com.
Well, welcome back, Vano. Joining me on the line shortly is Midi Pikarokawa Tate. Now, many of you know her as a politician, a local councillor, a former MP, the chair of the Vano Water Commissioning Agency, but actually in one of her other roles, she was a chief executive of the Women's Refuge, an organisation that supports women who suffer domestic violence. And as we stare down the barrel of the 30th anniversary of All Once Were Warriors, it's time that we just pause for a moment, take stock, and ask the simple question, have we come far enough since that Band-Aid of Once Were Warriors was ripped off? And for all to see, we discovered that not only is domestic whānau violence a big issue in this country, but it's also an issue that's not just a Māori issue. And I don't want to make this a Māori issue, and I don't want to make Once Were Warriors as this catalyst for how, you know, all Māori families act like that. They don't. But actually, we have a big problem, and I'll read out some of the data soon. So joining me on the line is the irrepressible and wonderful Midipika Rokawa Tate. Welcome, Midipika.
Kia ora, Matthew. Slight correction, my dear. I've been a local body politician, not an MP.
Oh, sorry. I was getting ahead of myself because I still think you should be an MP. In fact, I think you're a minister that is missing from somebody's cabinet.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much for your confidence.
And not only that, if I had my way, you'd be a dame of the realm. You'd be the Governor General by now.
Oh, my goodness. I can just feel my head getting bigger and bigger now.
And I'm being naughty because it is Thursday.
That's right.
Hey, but let's, being serious for a moment, I mean, this is a big issue. 30 years ago, Once Were Warriors came out, and I think it spooked a lot of people. But, actually, it also highlighted that while this is not the life that everybody leads, certainly there are a lot of people in such a small country that are impacted by domestic whānau violence. Can we talk about your experience as the chief executive of Women's Refuge back in the day?
Yes, Matthew, what I can say, and it's very true, that, we're trying to reverse a situation that's been in existence in New Zealand for over 100 years. We've had extreme high tolerance to the abuse of women and children in our homes, unfortunately. So there have been efforts, of course, as you know, and Women's Refuge has been leading that for many, many years to try and educate the public, to try and educate whānau, to just say, no, this is not good enough, and we shouldn't be putting up with it.
Mm. And see, even now, I mean, you know, when I consider the number of women that are escaping, in particular, a domestic or whānau violence incident, we're talking about the woman having to leave the home. We're not talking about the man leaving the home or the intimate partner that might be creating the violence. We're talking about a woman, and not only just the woman leaving the home, but also potentially their children, and in many cases, fur babies as well. You know, so why is it that have we got this whole thing back to front?
Well, we tend to look at providing services and information after the event, like the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. Mm. But, you know, we have to understand that the neighbours could be speaking up, the family could be speaking up, work sites could be speaking up, schools should be highlighting what does a safe home look like and all of that sort of thing. So we tend to do after the event. Every home should have a champion. Every whānau should know that there's somebody that they can trust, somebody who will listen, somebody who will, for God's sake, take action. So there's a lot of things that we can do that don't cost anything, but they really only take the commitment and the drive of a number of people to make that change. And the commitment, I believe, it's there, but it can be lukewarm at times.
So that talks to the central pillar of this, though, isn't it? Because, you know, a lot of people, they still aren't talking about the fact that this is going on. So a lot of us, and I hate to say it, but there are people in the world today that still say after an event occurs and sadly somebody might be murdered or whatever the case might be, I knew there were issues. We say things after the fact rather than either intervening or attempting to prevent it from occurring.
That's very true. And to a certain extent, I can understand that. People are fearful of getting involved. Mm. People think, well, what if I'm wrong? I could be putting myself in harm's way. And all of that is true. But at the end of the day, the person who doesn't get the support and help is really usually our neighbour, a member of our family, and all they're wanting is for somebody to be there to help at that most crucial time. So we have to sometimes overcome our own fear and do what we know is right.
Do you think we should be so afraid of intervening, though? I mean, I know this sounds crass because there are some people out there that are genuinely fearful of getting involved, particularly when they don't know the circumstances, or they themselves might be afraid of who might end up being the perpetrator. But should we stand out now and say, actually, we're not going to put up with this anymore, I am going to take the risk and intervene? Or should we maybe rely on the police? And if we rely on the police, I mean, do the police have enough resources to get out there and respond to, you know, for the data that I'm looking at, are tens of thousands of reports?
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Matthew, but research has shown that in every family, the family members know the brother or the sister or the uncle or the father that doesn't keep his hands and his boots on the ground or by their side. Mm. So the perpetrator of abuse is known to all the family members, but they won't take them on. That's the problem. They won't take them on. They could take them on as a family. They could take them on individually. They could get somebody who's bigger, stronger, and can deal to them. I mean, I'm all for dealing to somebody who abuses a woman and abuses children. I mean, I say, put them in the hospital, not in the bloody morgue, but deal to the bastard.
Mm. Just some statistics for you, Whānau. I mentioned them before. In 2020, 2021, there were 155,338 family harm incidents, which accounted for 16% of all police frontline activity. And yet, family violence events, while increasing by 60% over the past 5 years, they're still predicted to increase by a further 35% by 2025. That's just 1 year away. And yet, 67% of family violence episodes still remain unreported. So if we're dealing with 155,000 incidences that are reported, or that account for, rather, all police frontline activity, throwing that other 67% of family violence episodes into the mix, if they were to be reported, that's overwhelming. You know, to be honest, Mitty Pecker, I can't fathom how violent a society we have become for such a small, bloody country.
Yes, we have become a very violent society. We've become totally intolerant. We're intolerant of difference. We're intolerant of somebody that doesn't look or speak like us. And so, and then, of course, in the home situation, where perhaps there's not the income coming in, where there's unsuitable housing, where the partner might be away for the next 2 years inside, all of that sort of thing. It's a cauldron just boiling away in the household. The wife, cops it, and particularly the children as well. But the other thing that I don't believe we're highlighting enough is the increase in sexual assault that's happening in Aotearoa. So these are big issues. We need to talk about them more. We need to see who can be out there as an advocate and make sure that we're getting services that are fit for purpose and not letting anybody off the hook. Everybody has to. It's a collective response that is needed. Matthew, not just somebody trying to do it on their own. It's a collective response.
And yeah, you're right, because even across the Tasman in recent weeks, we've seen women and whānau and men and whoever taking to the streets in respect of the increasing number of women being not only assaulted but murdered. That's only a couple of hours away from where we are. And yet here in Aotearoa, here in New Zealand, we constantly amp up the newspapers and there it is, another story of a woman being raped or a woman being murdered. And while there are some that say, well, you know, women aren't the only ones that are sexually violated, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, but that stands in complete deference to the immense number of figures that are out there that show that by far they are the most at-risk group.
Well, and that's right, and I've been delighted to see that. in Australia where they've had their marches, they've had members of parliament, they've had the Prime Minister. I saw the Prime Minister of Australia at one march and delivering an address and saying, listen, if we're going to get serious, then that seriousness has to be at the very, very top. Now, I know we've got a coalition government right now that's talking about 100 days, repeal this, repeal that. I can tell you the elimination of family violence will make a major difference to their spending in other areas for the government. So why don't they say that's one of our priorities? Boy, you hit that, put that in front of New Zealanders, we'll wake up very quickly and say, are you for real?
It's interesting. No? It's a really good point because, you know, we're so caught up in at the moment the cost of living and finding money to fund tax cuts and there's even cutbacks in frontline service programs that they said weren't going to happen, but they are. And it's like, let's tutu around the edges, but let's not go after this big, clearly obvious target over here. And just finally, some figures. The Ministry of Justice recently estimated that more than 1 in 5 New Zealand adults, that's 23% of the population, experience sexual assault in their lifetime. The Ministry of Justice reported that almost 1 in 3 Māori adults experienced sexual assault during their lifetime. In other words, 30%. You know, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, let's tutu around those edges. Let's not attack the root cause of the issue or the problem. And I guess that's my next question for you in your experience and all you've seen, because, you know, I'd like to say that you're a citizen of the world. What's your observation in terms of what fundamentally drives this sort of issue?
I think a lot of it, I think historically we've had a very high tolerance to violence. So we need to make sure that we take it seriously, and we need to put the resources where they're needed, and make sure that everybody understands it's a fundamental human right to be safe in your own home, and so that puts the responsibility on everybody, on neighbours and everybody else. But you know, it's a big fight. There's no doubt about it. It's a really big fight. And the government could make a difference. But I'll tell you something that we don't really talk about much, and that is the true cost of the continuation of domestic violence, the true cost to this nation in health costs, in truancy, in court costs, you know, all of that, our justice system, everything, loss of labour force participation. The true cost is absolutely colossal for our nation. So if we would, Matthew, if we would only address it, get serious, then we could see the spend in other areas, social issues areas, start to come down, because we were addressing a fundamental driver of social welfare costs in this country.
Yeah, it's incredible. And sorry, one more piece of data, if you like, and that is the death rate. New Zealand has a high female murder rate. New Zealand females are being killed at one of the highest rates in the industrialised world, and that was found by an American study a few years back. And this comes from Harvard University research, by the way. They looked at murder rates in the top 25 industrialised nations, put New Zealand as the fifth worst. A New Zealand report on domestic violence was released after that, which reinforced that research. And then some of the names that stand out. In contrast, only one of the 25 female homicides in New Zealand in 1998, for example, was firearm-related. I mean, we're talking about an intense amount of violence perpetuated on the most vulnerable in our society. So what makes such a small country so violent, do you think?
I think it's part of our DNA. And when I say DNA, I'm talking about the fact that New Zealand, you know, we were covered in bush at one stage. And so the culture of New Zealand, going way back in our history, was that you had to be hard. You had to hew this land out of the forest and out of the woods. You had to, you know, all of those things where it took out the early settlers. It took Māori participation, all of that. So there wasn't much time for, how would you say, niceties. It just had to get on with it and do what you had to do. Then, of course, we had the recession, World War, a couple of World Wars, and that took its toll on a young country fighting, you know, wanting to you know, live their best life. And I think that's unfortunate. But we look at our historically, and unfortunately, we're living with what we've sown, which we're a hard country. And we've lived a hard life, and that's been borne out by the behaviours in our homes.
And since January 2011, whānau, there have been 695 deaths in New Zealand categorised by police as a homicide. In New Zealand, charges that can arise from a homicide include murder and manslaughter and overlapping offences, even infanticide, for crying out loud. But the data that I've had a look at shows that 211 of the victims were female. Of those, 158 were adults aged 18 and over. 22 of the women were killed in driving or transport-related incidents, but by far, the vast majority were those that were killed by a partner or another family member. Sadly, four of the women in that data group were pregnant when they were beaten or stabbed to death. My God, that is some confronting stuff. And I guess my question for you, Medipicker, is going all the way back to, the not the catalyst, but certainly something that pulled the Band-Aid off or what was going on, which is Once Were Warriors. I mean, this has been going on well before that movie went to air.
Oh, absolutely. It's been going on well before that. But don't forget also too, Matt, what I haven't mentioned, but we've got a history of an excessive drinking culture in New Zealand, a bit like our Aussie cousins over the ditch. So we've got that. We've had that to contend with in our homes. Now, of course, we've got the drug problem, which is a recent phenomenon in terms of hardcore drugs in the last two dozen years, and that sort of thing. So adding that to the mix. And then, of course, now with the impact of television and the violence and all of that. So all of these small incremental happenings are making a big impact on the home environment and our impressionable young youth. So it really is time that we've got serious about it again, focused on it. And, the statistics are great because it tells us how harmful the picture looks for the future. But it's action that's really required.
Mm. Okay, so I'm probably going to put you on the spot just a little bit, but I know you're really good at this stuff because you've lived this stuff, which is solution-driven. If you could say, look, here are the solutions that we need to work on. You've kind of like mentioned one, whereas, the current government stop focusing on the short-termism sort of thing and start having a look at, let's address this in your 100-day plan or whatever it is. Are there other things that they should be doing based on your experience or that we should all be doing based on your experience?
Well, one of the things that I would do is I would ask, first of all, obviously being Māori, and I am concerned at the number of Māori women, but Māori women are most at risk in their own tribal areas. Now, what the hell does that tell you, Matthew? Hmm. It tells you that we're not even, as tribal leaders, stepping up and ensuring there should be no Māori woman who is at risk of violence. Because she's living up hopefully near her whānau, but there's iwi and hapū that should be there to give protection. So we've got to make sure that we take the responsibility as tribal as leaders to say how come this is happening. We want it stopped, and we're going to do something about it. That's one thing. But the other thing too is where's the commitment by others? The liquor industry. Why aren't they ensuring that part of some of their profits go towards the education of how do we drink responsibly? Because that would be great to see. What about the health system? Is anybody asking the woman who comes repeatedly because she's been knocked about around, what's happening there? Why don't we have mandatory reporting and prosecute those who fail to report? There are people that know overseas that they have to report. If they see an incident where a woman has been harmed, they will be taken to court if they don't report. We don't have enough of those steps, Matthew, and they're not too difficult to bring about and to support.
Agreed. Finally, one of the things that really brought this home to me was a recent case. A beautiful young lady around the corner, who was living around the corner from me, rather, her name was Lena Harrop, and she was the subject of a Sunday, sadly Sunday's Going investigation and part of their last program recently on Sunday. Now, Lena was Down syndrome, and it was a homeless Auckland man who violently preyed not only on her but another woman as well. Driving on the wrong footpath, trying to run the other woman over. But actually, for Lena, who was vulnerable, the most vulnerable of all of human beings and women, she was just out walking, and he murdered her in a park in Mount Albert. And it was one of the most distressing stories I've ever read or heard or witnessed. And what that young lady must have gone through was just evil writ large and terrible. In a country of less than 6 million people, we allow and have allowed this sort of behaviour to go on and to continue. And in my view, Medipicker, nobody in this country, in particular our most vulnerable, should ever have to put up with that shit.
Oh, yes. I mean, I thought that was absolutely disgusting. But I was talking last night to a woman who speaks regularly at prisons, both in men's prisons and in women's prisons, and she was talking to me, and we were talking about why, again, referring to the questions that you've asked this afternoon. And one of the things that we came to the conclusion is that our young men in particular, they're not talked to about what does the healthy sexual relationship look like? What does healthy sexual health look like? That young men don't get any of that. And you see, it's very important that they understand that what a loving sexual relationship looks like. But if they're just going to get it from the porn sites, these young men, well, they think that's the real McCoy. Well, of course it's not, you know. And so there's that education content that needs to be delivered sensitively, of course, but young men in particular, if they're not getting that, if they're not coming from an environment where they're seeing and hearing, I love you, son, you're going to be the best young man you can possibly be, I'm here to support you, all of those affirmations to a young person to hear constantly, then they start to believe in themselves. They don't have to get their gratification by beating up somebody or being sexually active in the wrong way. So these are, to you and I, Matthew, they seem straightforward. To young people who've never heard of those sort of things, it could be quite overwhelming. But it needs to be, that conversation needs to be had and quickly, I think, and as early as possible.
Absolutely. Mere pikere kawate, thank you so much for joining me on this most important of kaupapa.
Kia ora. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Kia ora.
Thank you so much.
On the streets with a man beating on her dreams. She had a baby, she's only 17. Now she only dreams about things she's seen in magazines. There was a friend from school that everyone loved, Kamaliyaya Mawara. He could have had it all. Now it's winter, he's only 19. With a knife and make you wanna break down and cry.
We can make a change, we can turn the tide. I don't wanna cry no more, I don't wanna cry no more. We can make a change, we can turn the tide. I don't wanna cry no more, I don't wanna cry no more. What it means makes you wanna break down and cry.
We can make a change,
we can turn the tide.
I don't wanna cry no more, I don't wanna cry no more.
We can make a change,
we can turn the tide.
I don't wanna cry no more, I don't wanna cry no more.
Oh,
wanna cry no more. I don't wanna cry no more.
We can make a change. We can turn the tide.
I don't wanna cry no more. I don't wanna cry no more.
We can make a change.
Well, welcome back, Violet, to the special on whānau and domestic violence. You know, these are hard-hitting statistics, but we don't want people to be, how do I put it, whakamara about any of this, because at the end of the day, these are the conversations we need to have if we are going to continue pushing forward on bringing the problem back to heal. Well, bringing the problem to heal, so to speak. Just a refresher on some of the data that we've been talking about. In New Zealand and Aotearoa, it's estimated that only 33% of family violence cases are reported. On average, police attend a family violence episode every 4 minutes. 67% of family violence episodes still remain unreported, therefore, and nearly half of all homicides and reported violent crimes are related to some form of family violence, according to the statistics. Our family violence events have increased 60% over the past 5 years and are predicted to increase by a further 35% to 2025. In 2020 and 2021, there were, 155,338 family harm incidences, which accounted for roughly about 16% of all police frontline activity. And the statistics go on and on. But coming back to the point I made earlier about the about Once Warriors and the 30th anniversary, how far have we come? Well, joining me on the line to talk about this is someone I have an immense amount of respect for, particularly when it comes to all things data, and that is Tar Mark Solomon, who joins me now. Welcome, Mark.
Kia ora, Matt. How are you, my friend?
Oh, very good, very good. Hey, these are hard-hitting statistics, but actually one of the big questions is, based on what you know and the work and the mahi that you do around the country and have done for many years, have we come further or have we just stopped somewhere and need to go further?
I just think you've got to go back to those figures that you've been quoting, Matt. I mean, for myself, when I first got involved around the areas of family violence, I was part of the Māori Advisory Board to the Police Commissioner. And it was under Commissioner Bush, September 2015. He sent me all of the police data for family violence in 2014. 102,000 family violence call-outs.
Wow.
65 minutes per call-out, two police officers. 226,000 hours of police work. But those 102,000 call-outs encapsulated 278,000 women and children. Now, your own figures, it's 150-something thousand last year. It's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Well,
it hasn't stayed in a stable state.
Well, some of the other data, if I don't mind, if you don't mind me now sharing some of this with you, is physical and sexual violence data affects 1 in 2 of Māori women, or 58%, over a lifetime. When other forms of violence are included, this could be as high as what some are saying is 80%. Physical and sexual intimate partner violence, it's called so IPVPV, affects 1 in 3 or 34% of European women over a lifetime, and 1 in 3, 32% of Pacific women. So by far, when it comes to Māori, there seems to be quite a significant imbalance.
Yes. Māori women, in a sense, take the brunt of the family violence of this country. You know, and the fact is they make up roughly 7% of the population.
It's a huge difference.
It is. But it's across all ethnicities. I was part of the setting up of the integrated safety response in Christchurch. I think in the first month of that pilot, which kicked off in July 2016, in the first month in Christchurch, there were 2,500 family violence call-outs.
Well, actually, to your point, which is a really good one, because I've always said I don't want this to be a race to the bottom in terms of Māori statistics and data. Asian women report a lower lifetime prevalence of 1 in 10 or 11.5%. But some of the advocates and people that I've spoken to actually also believe that they are lower rates of reporting when it comes to Asian communities, because it's one of those hidden things within some of these communities, whereas in Māori communities it becomes a lot more obvious, there's a lot more of a lens on it. And so, we could go on and on and on. But actually, a lot of this comes down to also the reporting within a community as well. So we might be dealing with other ethnicities or groups or population groups where there is a high prevalence of domestic violence, but because the lens is always on what I will always say is the Māori population group, then that's where we focus at our attention.
There is, I would argue, to his attention. Mm. It is hidden. There are attempts to hide the family violence. Of course there are.
Mm.
And it's in all cultures. It's in all cultures, not just in Māori,
mm.
but the sad reality is Māori women in this country take the brunt of it.
Mm. Can I ask you another question, if you don't mind? From your experience, and you've worked a lot in the community, we've done a lot of work together ourselves, from your own experience and observations and insights, therefore, why is it that you, I mean, you know, we talk about colonisation, people talk about intergenerational harm and so on and so forth. Is there any one or some things that stand out the most for you?
I think all of this violence is a learned thing.
Mm.
It's a learned thing. But I think the biggest issue that actually faces us is that we won't talk about it, or we hide it, or we turn our backs to it. And just one of the things you said before, Matthew, we have the highest levels of intimate partner violence of any country in the OECD. Why aren't we talking about this? Why do we all tend to turn our backs to this?
Mm. So with that in mind, why do you think we don't talk about it enough?
I don't know. Because
for some, you know, it is about that shame. I mean, I know stories of people in our own families.
And I know of one incident where a woman devolved about her rape, who was brutally beaten by her partner, who wasn't the rapist, but because she talked about it.
Hmm.
You know? There's a lot of weird stuff out there within the human society, but I don't think we're educated on these issues. I mean, we've had a bit of education around family violence,
mm.
but the sexual violence, the other types of violence, there's very little talk because it's a shame issue. Everyone turns their back.
Well, of course, and there's also things we know create relationship breakdowns and pressures in the household, financial distress. You know, we know that at the moment a lot of families are struggling with the cost of living and all these other sorts of issues as well that are very public. But then there's the other stuff, you know, the alcohol abuse and drug taking and all these other sorts of things in between, these intergenerational things, such as, you know, for example, the way that people have been treated in their, and not only them, but maybe their parents, etc. I mean, the Royal Commission into Abuse and Care highlighted a significant number of issues as well. I mean, I think you're right, it is really hard just to put your finger on one simple thing. Because, like solutions with this area too, there's no single solution.
Look, there's huge is trauma. Mm. It's historic trauma. There's financial issues. There's huge things that lead into the violence. But we don't face it. We don't talk about it. We don't educate ourselves on how to manage that.
Mm. And I was reflecting on the 30th anniversary, of course, of Once Were Warriors, which was a hard-hitting movie and film for a lot of people to see, not just here at home, but around the world. And then that was, you know, followed on the heels of that was the What Becomes of the Broken Hearted, the second part of that that court series, if you want. But, you know, then the question comes back to, okay, so if that was a starting point, not that I'm saying it is a starting point, but it certainly, you know, brought it to the public's attention. Do you think we've come further in a positive way, or do you think that that was just the first step and at some point the band-aid needed to be ripped off?
I do think a lot of violence came back after the war.
Mm.
you know, a huge amount of soldiers that come back were suffering under post-traumatic stress, but there was nothing. So that was an era where there was a big increase. Alcohol has a huge issue in this country. If I take Canterbury as an example, if the Crusaders or the All Blacks lose, the women's refuges of Canterbury fill to overflowing.
Wow.
Over again. But it's not just in Canterbury. It's all over the country. Over again. Mixed with alcohol.
I mean, that's incredible because, you know, they, I mean, we tend to talk about this through the warrior culture sort of mentality in terms of Te Ao Māori. But, you know, coming back to the a point made earlier, this is not just about a single population group. And so I guess it stands to reason that in many ways if your team doesn't go so well and you belt the bottle at the local club and you go home, then chances are you're going to get into a bit of violence in the home as well. That's terrible to even think that.
Yeah, but it happens all the time, Matthew.
Mm. And interesting,
you know,
just
if you look at what the alcohol issue, in many ways we are a binge-drinking society.
Mm.
My dad say it was known as the 6 o'clock swill.
Yeah.
Across New Zealand. Finished work, straight to the pub, drink as much as you can before the 6 o'clock closing. The only difference in my generation to my dad's is that we went from a 6 o'clock closing to a 10 o'clock closing. But the style of fast drinking still stayed the norm.
Mm.
My children's generation, the whole drinking's changed where they didn't actually leave their home to go into town until 11 o'clock at night.
Well, and then in recent years you've got, I'm going to get it wrong, RTDs emerging and kids preloading on and drinks before going out to the pub. And so by the time they get to the pub, they're inherently smashed.
Well, absolutely, because it's cheaper.
Mm. And of course,
cheaper even to buy the bottle store before you go into town, so you're half cut before you go.
And then even in some of the stories that emerge in the news now, we're not just talking about domestic violence, we're talking about king hits and punch-ups in public and all this other sort of stuff, which is a lot more obvious now than it has been before. But just coming back to one thing you mentioned before about World War II and after the war, here's an interesting piece of data. By December 1949, the War Pensions Branch in here in Aotearoa had a total of nearly 7,600 neurosis cases. That's huge. I mean, neurosis is obviously a form of PTSD. So 7,600 people. And then finally, if you think about what Mark's just said, and knowing full well that we had a huge contingent come back from the Vietnam War, we had a huge contingent even still coming back from Afghanistan more recently and more recent conflicts, it seems that it's a never-ending cycle. So, Mark, from your perspective, and you know, I've said there's no magic way of dealing with this necessarily. Are there things that we as a country need to be doing better from your perspective or doing more of?
We, as the citizens of this country, need to understand how big this issue. We need to confront it.
Mm.
You know, I raised the issue with Ngaitahu about family violence and the statistics of those under harm, you know. And to be honest, in that data were some of our great-grandmothers, some of our grandmothers, our mothers, our aunties, our sisters, our cousins, and the same in the male. We're through to whakapapa.
Mm.
Why are we silent? What are we doing about it? Why are we allowing this to happen? You know, if my sister's abused, she's abused, but so is our whakapapa.
Mm.
That's what they're thinking.
And just so for,
I think we need to wake up. We, the people, need to wake up to this.
Well, and since we're talking about this in this way, whānau, here's another myth, that it only affects a certain age group within the population. Here's some more data, because I love data. Compared with other New Zealanders, adolescents between the ages of 15 and 19 have the highest rates of intimate partner violence. 1 in 3 or 29% of young people reported being hit or harmed by a partner, and up to 60% of high school students are recorded as having been in an emotionally or physically abusive relationship. 21% of women who stayed in the refuge were also under the age of 20. So in other words, between 15 and 19 years old. And at the other end of the spectrum, 1 in 10 elderly experience family violence, and 70% of those who experience harm are women. Evidence suggests that psychological abuse is the most common form of elder abuse. And just while I'm talking about elder abuse, a conversation I had a few years back with the Retirement Commissioner, Jane Wrightson, I think her name is, indicated that actually we're seeing even more advanced forms of elder abuse, such as grandchildren or children taking ATM cards and withdrawing money from bank accounts and cleaning them out for their ice or pee addictions. So abuse comes in many ways and forms, and it's not just a single homogenous age group, like it's not a single homogenous ethnicity.
No. So, it's a national issue, in my opinion. The only ones that can reverse all of this nonsense is us.
And so, Mark, what I'm gathering from you, one final question, if I may, because I know you're a busy man, is just that having that conversation and understanding what's going on in society at the moment, it seems to me that the one big thing is that open communication, that open narrative of, you know, we need to understand it more, at the same time as we need to appreciate that it is happening. We can't any longer just sweep it under the carpet.
Well, I go on about the education as an example, and this is actually a true story. I run into a guy I went to school with, a man called Ken Clearwater. Now, Ken's been involved for decades in male abuse arena. But when I run into him, he had a badge on, 1 in 6. I went, oh, come on, Ken. We were both at Papa Nui High School when we changed to the decimal system. Get into the modern world, mate. Mark, not 1 in 6 shillings and pence. 1 in 6 New Zealand male has been sexually abused.
Hmm.
And that was a hell of a shock to me. It was a hell of a shock to me to get that data from Commissioner Bush on the amount of family violence call-outs. The more I've got involved in these issues, the scale is frightening.
And also, for such a small country, I mean, we're not the biggest country in the world. We don't have a high population. I mean, we're a relatively small country, but this to be such a big, big kaupapa. Hey, so Mark Solomon, thank you so much for joining me on this, the 30th anniversary of Once for Warriors, as we try and unpack this horrible issue of domestic and family violence. And thank you so much for all the work that you do, Ihor. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure, mate.
All right. Ka kite.
Ka kite, Ihor.